I'm like
word.
Yeah, we're tired but fabulous. Off today.
We're off. The fucking L train isn't running, so it took three times as long as it normally takes me to get here.
Yeah, not great.
Not great.
I went out with Sophie last night from a previous one of our guests.
Oh, cool.
And
oh, that's Sophie.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Sophie.
Cool. And got all the alcohol, and so now I'm a little. Now I'm a little tie-tie, but powering through. Oh,
baby.
But Emily, she is fun. We're having her back on for sure.
Did you go to Crit's show last night?
Oh my God, I did so much. My nerve pain's been bad and it sent me into like a mania of like, I have to distract myself. And so last night I did so much. I went to Crit's show. Do you know Crit? Too?
Yeah.
Oh
my God. I love Crit. That's crazy.
He's amazing. That's
I had to leave his talk early today at Mocha the Geffen because I had to record this with you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I like had to leave like his mid like talk.
Man, it is really small world.
I mean, he's really sweet. I met him because he like came into my house. I had a party and I was making tea and he came up to me and he was like, can you make me some tea? And like, I was sick and I was just like, excuse me. Like, I wasn't like mean or rude or anything, but I just was like, fuck, I like really need the rest of this ginger because my throat is killing me. But I like made him a tea and I just was like, who do you think you are? Like, in my home, but I was just like, he's so sweet that it didn't, I mean, that like, I'm kind of standoffish at first. And then I was like, oh, you're like really, really sweet. And then I found out later that like, just so he like knows like all my friends, which I guess is like why he was over at my house. But and then I went to a show last night at Various Small Fires and it was so good. I, of course, went late because of like Uber pool drama. It's like, it was cute though. Like, Crit's video pieces are so beautiful. And then I went after that, or like my friend Jayla performed, who I was talking about, who was wearing Fear Safe. I like got the best documentation of her performing at Various Small Fires in a Fear Safe like jumper. And then it was beautiful. There was like a smog machine. And then I left that to go to another venue where she performed again. And then I was there until 2:30 a.m. when my friend Jasmine was like, we gotta leave her. I'm not gonna be able to get us home. We were just, like, falling asleep. And I'd like read everyone's tarot and I don't know, it was whatever.
Sounds like a whirlwind.
Yeah.
Should we do an intro before?
Yeah, we should probably do an intro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh shit, how are we gonna do this?
Yeah, guys. This is like, should we just
wait, whose podcast is this?
I think we're gonna double post, right?
This is a crossover. Wait, we're on a podcast?
Yeah. What the fucking god
shit.
I don't know. Should we just do both intros?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What wait, can we hear your intro?
Oh yeah, hold on.
Ba 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 da 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 da.
Yo, everybody, welcome to another Smooth Jazz Radio.
It's 2 a.m. somewhere around the world.
That's right. This is a crossover episode between Art and Labor and Death Panel. So it's going to just go in both feeds, I assume.
So what's up, people?
So this is Beatrice Adler Bolton.
And I'm Emily Barker.
Wait, no. Fuck you guys. I'm still stuck with Vince Patty.
No, you can be Lucia.
That's fine.
How's it going, guys? We have a very special surprise for you today. This is not the death panel today. Today we are death and labor. It is the long anticipated crossover episode.
Yeah.
And so welcome to the death panel. I'm Beatrice Adler Bolton.
I'm Emily Barker.
And I'm Vince Batty. And I forgot what order we do this in.
And please give a warm welcome to OK Fox and Lucha Love of Art and Labor.
Hey.
Hello, baby.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for having us. This is great. I'm really stoked to be at this long table.
I know. So, yeah, because this is an auditory medium, we imagine us right now sitting at a table. And it's sort of like very long and narrow.
Kind of like imagine Mr. Burns like lair.
Very
with
Mr.
Like...
Burns.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're having like a aristocratic dinner and it's very terse and we can take long, deep breaths.
But we're just eating laptops.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's very loud sipping.
Because we have lots of beverages.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're really stoked to have you guys on. OG podcast fam, friends of the pod, whatever.
Yeah.
And let's fucking talk about Amazon HQ 2 for a second.
Yo, that stuff is wild. It's so wild. Like, I can't, like...
I'm suspicious.
Let's wind back for a second. If you don't know... Amazon HQ 2 was just canceled for New York.
Normally, I don't support cancel culture, but...
I think I've said on our podcast before that billionaires can be canceled. Billionaires and capitalists
are canceled. Wait. You're using the wrong language. Okay, so yeah, let's be clear. It's we're policing language here on this podcast, and it's people of means.
People of means.
People with means can be canceled.
Yeah.
So yeah, Amazon HQ2.
I live my life trying not to offend anyone
with $1 billion.
Yes, especially not them.
I live frozen in time.
Well, all that money makes your feelings like extra sensitive, so you have to be extra careful with them. It's like a fragile bone syndrome of the mind.
They feel more than the rest of us.
Yeah, because like the more money you have, the more empathy you have.
Exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, you can buy that, actually.
Yeah. You can manifest it, too, but the quickest way is to buy it.
Well, okay, so the really good takeaway from the Amazon stuff, like the stuff to feel proud about it, that it is a really good, tangible win. Mm-hmm. Like, Amazon was going to take over a site that was slated for, like, multiple public schools and a distribution site for public school lunches and like a bunch of housing units, including affordable housing units. And that's no longer going to happen. And that's a really big, important win. And also a really cool part about the win was Amazon literally cited that, or it was leaked that like one of the reasons was like the activists were targeting like things beyond just the New York deal, like targeting their ties to ICE and targeting
Their anti-union actions.
And you guys got a chance to talk to some of the organizers, right?
We talked to Whole Worker.
Oh right, true. Sorry.
And that they're sort of affiliated just because of the acquisition of Whole Foods into the Amazon umbrella.
Yeah.
I go to a lot of the meetings. This is kind of outside the podcast. I don't talk a lot about it on the podcast. But I'm in the Ridgewood Tenants Union.
And they're the ones who are primarily doing the organizing?
No, Queens Barrios or Queens Neighborhood United, which they're more based in Jackson Heights. But they're one of the really big grassroots groups that were doing a lot of organizing. And I went to the I went to the town hall, the second town hall, which was really incredible. And like I think even just reading the story about that town hall, I think gave a lot of people hope. But being there, it was incredible because it was like just so clear that they were losing. Like there was like a pro Amazon rally with like the Carpenters Union.
Oh my God.
So the Carpenters Union is notorious.
Did it have a scab rat participating in the rally?
Scabby.
They had nothing. They had a truck full of signs and like a bunch of like plate, like just, it's like a tiny group of paid plants. Compared to like a group at least 10 times the size that was, you know, protesting Amazon being there.
And they're not even looking at a second site now. They've just decided they're not doing New York. They're going to, I guess, pursue the other two deals that are in the works. I think one's in the South.
Well, the more insidious thing, I'm sure this is probably what Lucia wants to get to, but...
I do. Yeah. I want to get to the seedy underbelly of the deal. Well, I don't know. I guess, like, teasing the whole deal apart, though, is important because there were aspects of the real estate that was like, oh, there's certain issues of, like... the site being toxic that they wanted to develop on. So just looking at
the... they're going to still build schools on there though, right? Because it's New York.
Oh, of course. Yeah, they're going to be like, why don't we...
And all the school lunches.
Just have a preschool. Yeah.
All of the food distribution.
And don't check the pipes. Don't worry about it. Well, it's New York.
It's like, you know, the thing about the city is it's so toxic to have kids here. Kids in the city
are kids
are like,
very toxic. I hate it.
If you grow up,
especially if you grow up in NYCHA housing, which is like toxic. It's toxic to grow up there. People have way higher rates of asthma and all this shit. Like it's like it's the city itself.
Yeah, most of them are filled
toxic.
With black mold. There is like lead paint. There's lead pipes. Yep. There's like there was one building that I heard of where like the windows wouldn't open in half the apartments. They were painted shut, which is like. Horrifying to think about in the event of an emergency.
Fires are a myth, you know? Who needs another escape route?
Yeah, no, totally.
But the thing that is important not to gloss over is that there's already a huge Amazon presence in New York City, and they want to expand that. Mm-hmm. Like, they're still going to expand that, like, you know?
Yeah, well, I think the other interesting thing that I think a lot of people have been noting just because of, like, the timing is that Google, right, like, just basically bought... the West Side, like
they
literally
bought the Chelsea Market.
Yeah.
If folks who aren't familiar with us, check out our episode about the Andy Warhol show at the Whitney.
Yes.
We do a guided tour of the show, and we start it at the Chelsea Market.
That is the beginning of the show, though. Yeah. Really. Yes. Yeah.
And we talk about the how Amazon recently acquired it, and like you know
how Google did
or Google. Yeah. Remember this.
We're keeping each other straight here.
Yeah. We're the fucking same. Yeah.
Google's on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't know. It's interesting because like they didn't get a big fucking subsidy package, and like they didn't, you know, make a big goddamn deal about it. And not really. No, they kind of tried to slide under the wire so that nobody would like notice that they were just like becoming like the second biggest like real estate holder in fucking Manhattan. But like I don't know. I don't know what you guys think about that. I mean, it's still quite evil, but maybe it's less like showy evil. Like in a way, like they're being less sort of like, you know,
there's definitely different corporate personalities attached to these business ventures, right?
Yeah.
It's like the Google one is all about infantilizing the employees there and just sort of being like, oh, it's going to be so awesome. You guys, we're going to hang out. We're going to play with Legos. You get your little computer going. If you do your homework extra good, you get a cookie.
And please like, don't ever leave. Here's dinner and breakfast and lunch. And here's your cubbyhole to sleep in. Like
but
an
legit. It's so, the food's so good there. I went to SVA across the street. I would go in and eat lunch at the Google building. And it ruled.
My brother interned there years ago.
Oh, no, no. Oh, you have to make friends. And then they give you a visitor pass. And you wear a visitor pass the whole time. And then you also take it or leave it. But they will try to make you wear a beanie propeller that says Noogler on it.
No.
Just to point you out. You get a little...
You could be like that Vince Vaughn movie.
Oh, God, the one where they go and they intern
they
there.
They intern for Google. It's a SpawnCon for Google.
Yeah, that immediately did not age well as soon as it was released.
Oh,
basically.
Yeah. Much like Vince Vaughn himself.
Yeah.
Oh. Got him.
Yeah. I mean,
Speaking
he's not...
to power.
That's what people come here for, is just spicy takes from me about Vince Vaughn.
There can only be one true Vince.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Real talk, though, that picture you posted of you and Sophie,
yeah.
I don't think you've ever looked more like Arca than you did in that
picture. For reference, I get this a lot, that I look like Alejandra.
I know what Arca looks like.
And like
I do like the music.
Like
they,
Vince.
Yeah, okay. They look like me, and I've been getting it for years, and I... the only thing I would like to note is that I am like a head taller than them. So.
Also, you are like definitely a 12 and he's like a 7.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's not as cute as you.
Well, yeah, and you're taller.
Would hit.
You get more points.
Yeah, but your nose is like way cuter than his. Just
saying. That's the other thing people come to our podcast for is me self-deprecating and then Emily and B just building me up. It's great.
Friendship.
So the friends they are full.
I know.
So yeah, HQ2 off the table.
Maybe.
Amazon's still a problem.
Do you think they're just gonna basically like buy a bunch of smaller buildings and?
Well, they have a facility on, I want to say, 23rd and Madison that is like a Amazon Prime Now hub that it has a public library, I think, on the first floor. And then the rest is an empty warehouse, essentially. Like, or a warehouse full of shit.
Yeah.
That's
far from empty.
There's like, the windows are blacked out and, like, mirrored out so you can't, like, see in. And that's, like, one of seven facilities in Manhattan that are, like, entire buildings, basically, like, more than 15 stories high, full of
one of the things
shit that you need in 3 hours or less.
That were yelled at the town hall. There's a lot of like yelling because one of the Amazon like VP of PR guys were there, and he was there, and people were like yelling. Like he was saying, he was like on this like he was just like on one. He was like, oh, I work with the Long Island City facility that is, you know, that Amazon, you know, has had for a while. And we call ourselves Amazonians and
no.
We all get along great.
Absolutely not.
And then like somebody literally yelled, you're not supposed to yell at a town hall because it's like.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. You're not. You get like.
Civil. Civil, everyone.
And then, but it was just beautiful because he was like, why won't you let your workers unionize? Like, that's total bullshit. He was like, that's total bullshit. You won't let your workers unionize. You won't let them have breaks. Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, just like passionate. It was like incredible. And, you know, and like that made huge difference. Like that outburst, there was a banner drop. There was, everybody had little Amazon Lies signs. Like you're not supposed to have signs at the town hall. They get mad if you raise it up too high. But everyone was just like, hold, like at an auction, everyone was just like, hold that.
Well, I love that. The thing that I really loved, which was like, I don't know who was like, basically like using Amazon boxes as like ready-mades. Cause like you just fucking flip it and put eyes on it and then it's just like a frowny face. Like they, I don't know. That will forever be like the way that people protest Amazon from now on. And like the irony is that like everyone just has one of those in their house.
There's not one in our apartment right now.
Well, that's the thing. It's very good to not, you know, to be able to not use Amazon, but it's also like there's like that's something me and Lucia were talking about when we were hanging out the other day. It was like the Starbucks guy, the Amazon guy. They both think they're like beloved because they're so rich and
well, and they're like in a little chamber,
like
of,
yes men bubble.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
And yeah, the admiration and also like the verbal kind of reinforcement where they're like, "Hey, everyone, positivity, manifest, beautiful mind," and they're just like. Throwing out little catchphrases and they're like, everyone's like, yes, I also believe in beauty. Wait, so how do I stay alive? And they're like, whoops, gotta get on a helicopter.
Peace out. Like,
I'm waiting for AMI to release Bezos's dick pics before I really render a verdict on whether I like him or not.
Oh my God. There's been far too much exposure of our corrupt leadership's dicks.
Literal dicks.
Like, I am curious though.
I would argue not enough.
I'm curious what the dick of someone looks like who feels comfortable saying I love you alive girl in a romantic way.
Oh,
like there has to be some correlation to that way of talking to people and what his penis looks like in my mind.
I think it's probably huge because if it's small, you gotta be nicer, you know? Just big dicks are lazy. Like,
that's... God, it's probably like average and mediocre, just like their whole fucking existence. Like, it's like.
Yeah, I agree.
No, yeah. Sorry, you go ahead, Emily.
Have you seen The Office that he first started Amazon out of? Like, only someone with an extremely mediocre penis would sit in that 10 to 12 hours starting a company. It's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. It's like the most depressing
We describe it.
It's this photo of him like balding. He looks somehow like 10 years older than he does now in this photo, like 20 years ago. Just like,
I wonder why.
The money made him young again.
And he's like hunched over
the blood of young people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blood of
young people. He probably gets IVIG.
And there's like a Amazon, like a poorly like taped to the wall, like Amazon in like horrible font, like sliding off the wall on the side, like a cord with like 100 cords plugged into it, and like old ass computer, and like looks like the office is about to burn down, like stains on the rug, like everything is a horrible shade of like beige or gray. Everything looks really dirty. And it's just like there's like boxes. It's like a messy, nasty kind of like office space with the like Amazon on the side of the wall. And like the craziest thing I think is the back of the computers, the way everything is plugged in looks like a literal insane person did it. And and it's like, you know, like an artist in a studio should have like that type of extension cord with like 100 other ones somehow plugged in, but not like a tech person.
He hasn't figured out electricity yet.
I feel like that's part of the Amazon aesthetic though.
Everything looked like a fucking like LAN party
Amazon
from
basics.
The 90s.
Right.
Basically, like, anyone who's plugging shit in that way cannot get a woman off. Let's be frank.
Wow. Burn.
Lay it down.
Well, that's
McKenzie was just leaving with half.
You know that when guys, like, when anyone ties up, like, a little cord in, like, in a meticulous way, or like organizes the router in a specific way, they're like better at sex. Like, you know.
Sorry, stop. Don't bring
it. You know.
No.
It's so hot. It turns me on. Like an organized set of like extension cables and like the router plugged in organized is like so hot to me. I don't know why.
Anyway, let's talk about protest.
What I was getting at before was the fucking Howard guy
Schultz
running for president, mm-hmm. and like Jeff Bezos and his crew trying to come to New York, and people like de Blasio and Cuomo opening up their arms for a big old hug. come through, you're our guy, everyone loves you. And then it's like reality check, nobody actually likes mm-hmm. having to use these things. Like the thing with Starbucks and the thing with Amazon is that they've eliminated all other things. People go to Starbucks because there's a lack of public space just mm-hmm. to like meet. And so Starbucks has become that for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then people use Amazon because it is cheap.
And it's exhausting to try to find brick and mortar places. You know, you go out IRL and you look at whatever, trying some shoes on or something, and it takes time. So you're
and nobody
like,
has
oh, I
time.
Guess I'll...
Right.
Nobody has time. Yeah. Everyone's overworked mm-hmm. and underpaid.
And also for at least Emily and I, at least, you also have like only so much energy at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So oftentimes I feel like I rely on Amazon for the stuff that I know I always need at a certain interval, because then I don't have to think about getting it anymore. Because mm-hmm. literally, like, I don't know, you have to like budget every part of your life, like energy wise. Like, are you gonna shower today, or are you gonna shower in 3 days so that you can like you know clean your closet today?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think also just like the fact of kind of all of this corporate consolidation is just that, like, yes, there are conveniences. Like, yes, I think I could argue that like Facebook is probably just...
Amazon is useful. I wouldn't call it
good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's useful. It has utility.
It's chaotic,
like,
neutral.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, I don't think anybody can deny that it isn't useful, but like, you know, at the same time, they're imposing like a cost, right? Like you are forced into that. And, you know, at the end of the day, the price they offer is the price you have to take, because... You know, you don't want to go.
Prices are so good.
It's a really good random shit that's like really expensive.
But that's how they make money.
Sometimes.
That's how they make margins.
Yeah,
like,
but
they...
people don't. My point is, people don't actually like having to do it.
No,
like deep down, people know like this.
Well, I don't know. Actually, I'm gonna cut you off right there and just say it's pretty dope to click a button
and then have a thing
no. I
show
agree
up.
With that, but why like, isn't it why isn't it like nationalized? Like a like why isn't it a public utility? Like
because
the post
someone
office
can
is dope.
Make money off of it, and that, like,
because like, it's like US, Jeff, in the U.S. Yeah. if it can be privatized, it will.
They'll
be
try.
Yeah.
It's not. Welcome to the land of libertarians.
I mean, but the thing about it is. People don't have the convenience dealing with their jobs and like everything else to necessarily like go to Best Buy or like go to the store, like get this thing that they really need. Like we're living under such time constraints on a daily basis where a lot of my friends who like, even if they're lucky enough to have jobs, like are gone like for most of the day, coming home like late at night, like barely have mm-hmm. time to like eat and do other things. And
yeah, especially with our subways collapsing, it takes three times as long to get anywhere.
Well, in New York, do y'all even have, like, supermarkets? I go there and I'm just like, where the fuck do I buy food? Like, where do I get tampons? Like, it's so hard to find anything in New
York. You can go to Whole Foods.
I mean, like, the funny thing is, like, I don't use Amazon at all somehow, but I totally understand my friends who do need to use it. And the only reason I'm like lucky enough to not use it is because Trader Joe's is so freaking cheap and my IHSS providers will take me to Trader Joe's. And that way I can like get like way less expensive stuff. But I know people who like have to use Amazon for groceries and stuff.
Yeah. Ooh, speaking of Trader Joe's, let's talk about drugs.
Yeah.
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 Let's talk about Oxy.
Yeah.
Oh, let's talk about the rap video.
What?
Oh, that I posted the other day.
What?
Yeah. I meant to. I've been looking in that story too.
It's, yeah.
And I was like trying to remember before recording today. I was like, I wanted to bring something up on Death Panel, and I was like,
wait,
yes.
What are you talking about? I'm so confused. Oh,
there's a rap video where it's like it's really creepy. It's to sell. Fucking opiates, and there is a giant rapping pill bottle.
Can you find it?
Oh, yeah. I love titrations, yeah, that's not a problem. And I got new patients, and I got a lot of them. I love titrations, yeah, that's not a problem. And I got new patients, and I got a lot of them. I love titrations, yeah, that's not a problem.
Wait, do you know what year it's from?
Yeah.
2015.
Of course,
no.
Yeah. Of course, that was a turnt period of Purdue marketing.
Yeah.
It was. It's like it's so wacky. It's like a guy in like a pill costume, and then very dystopian late
text
capitalist.
Me the link and I'll throw it into the
As if you need that to get addicted to something like OxyContin.
Oh my god.
You don't need that. Like it's
well.
Like,
it also
it was to increase. It was to promote the increase of sales.
Right.
That but was the.
It's crazy that also you like hit a market saturation with like a drug that is like intended to be addictive. That like you need to actually start pushing it with stunts like fucking dancing pill bottles. Like the fact that the point of the drug is that it is supposed to be highly addictive. And that you have already addicted all of the people who would be susceptible to it. And now you need to advertise.
Whatever. Yeah, they have a whole department dedicated to marketing and those people need shit to do.
Yeah, true. True.
I think,
God, marketing for a drug company.
I think it's so weird the way that opiates have made their way into the public consciousness.
Right.
And there's something about it that it's like, okay, so there is a really absurd joke here in somebody dressing up like a substance that is responsible for killing so many people and then making like light of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was thinking a little bit about the way that like Nan Goldin has kind of attached herself to this, you know, and then all of the different ways that art and culture, like a lot of musicians have gotten into opiates, and we have this like myth of the romantic drug addict that is like so talented and creative that ends up like taking this thing and then they die too young, and it's like, oh, but it's kind of hot also, and then that makes other people want to become junkies, and they're like, yeah, I'm like Burroughs now, man. I'm like Nick Drake right now. I'm like ODB.
I'm like, oh my God, I'm Basquiat.
And then
oh, I'm Mac Miller.
Drinking lean.
And then it makes it harder for people who like actually need it and like take it when they need it because they have no other choice to get it. It's just this horrible thing.
And I mean, the things that have been done to patients over the years in terms of like such specific targeting, like there's something I really want to talk about, which is their titration system that they use. It's kind of like a really interesting metaphor for their entire like marketing ethos as a company, basically. So like if you're on a low dose of an opioid, let's say like 5 or 10 milligrams twice a day, and your pain is still there, then instead of prescribing it more frequently, they basically instructed their sales reps to prescribe a higher, like talk to the doctors and tell the doctors to prescribe a higher dose. Because at a low dose, Purdue makes very little money, right? Let's say you're on 10 milligrams of Oxy twice a day. That's maybe about $30 a month for Purdue. If you're on 60, 80, that's $200-something a month. So it's like a 400% increase as you go up like in the scales of titration. And basically what they did is that instead of like the half-life of the medication like wears off before you get to the end of the 12 hours. Mm-hmm. So if you have breakthrough pain, the real actual way to handle that would be to increase the frequency. Mm-hmm. But that would not make them any money, right? Oh. So when they developed the titration system and like started marketing it, and you know, Richard Sackler himself in this like Massachusetts filing is like quoted as like having personally like pushed that on the sales reps like over and over to the point of like people avoiding him because he was like so like bothering them so much, like on nights and weekends or whatever. Like, are you pushing titration? Like, you got to do it. Like, like make sure that you're vocalizing the titration message. Like, it was such a huge thing. And really, like, what they did is they just like had a very specific plan to make people addicts. Essentially,
right.
You took someone like with breakthrough pain and you increase their dose, which is only going to make it worse. And it's also literally going to put you in the point of like withdrawal before your
end
of the dose. And so then they came up with the pseudo addiction thing, which was like, oh, well, you know, some patients that like start showing signs of addiction, like it's like pseudo addiction. You know, it's that if they're doing some of those behaviors, like if they're clock counting, if they're lying, like it's that they have like pain. And if you treat their pain, then that behavior goes away. So it's not addiction. And like then they were like, oh, let's do this drug savings plan, which is actually the whole reason this thing is happening in Massachusetts is this drug savings card that they pushed. And so they found that you were 30% more likely to continue a prescription of OxyContin longer than 90 days if you had this drug savings plan. And so what it did is it sort of front-loaded like a financial burden reduction for patients. Mm-hmm. And then as you go, as the dose is higher and on you're on it longer, like you're going to be basically paying like for the subsydy and beyond already. So
and
they're
that's
making
like a
money.
Classic way that people will also push drugs on the street. They'll be like, here you go, here's something.
Free sample.
Yeah, just want to, you know, it's a holiday today. For some reason, you're going to get it half price. And then you're like, oh man, what a relief. Oh, okay, I'm going to come back to this person now.
And then Nan Golden steps in and solves all of your problems.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, if you're on opiates longer than 90 days, your risk of overdose is 40% higher.
That's insanity. Well, and I think also there was a, I don't know if it was a super recent study, but that essentially cited that the amount, like doctors who were marketed to by Purdue were, I think it was 40% more likely to have patients overdose. So even if the doctors are like, I know what this, I like, or overprescribe, it's like, if, you know, even if the doctor is like, I know they're trying to market to me, I know that like, you know, that I'm like smarter than that, like I'm just gonna take the free lunch and like, you know, tell them to fuck off. Like the fact that that pushing like statistically leads to overprescription of specific drugs. I mean, it isn't actually even just Purdue, but like it's any kind of drug.
I have like a major gripe with doctors who will prescribe stuff because just a few months ago, like a friend of mine had to go to the psych ward, and one of the things they were doing was like stockpiling Xanax and stuff from this doctor. Mm-hmm. And all of the, there were pill bottles all over the house, and there was, you know, I mean, there were some just like painkillers and stuff mixed in there, and it was just all from this one person who was like, oh sure, I'll write you that script, like who cares. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't have any understanding of the way that the system works there, but mm-hmm. there definitely needs to be some kind of accountability for people. Like someone should be checking in, because it's like impossible to get things for people, you know, like if I need to, I don't know, whatever, get some medication for a UTI or something fucking common as hell. Mm-hmm. You have to go through all of these like hoops, and then yet there's someone else who's willing to be like, oh, hell yeah, addictive substances. Like, why not? Right, line my pockets.
You have the like pharma reps literally sometimes visiting these doctors day in, day out, mm-hmm. week after week after week. There's like mention in this like 300 some odd page court filing of pharma reps like not only like knowingly telling physicians to prescribe things improperly and knowingly pushing this titration system, but also literally calling out patients by name, mm-hmm. and getting the doctors to like it. I think it literally says like soliciting a pledge that the doctor promises to prescribe that specific patient opioids the next time they come in, which is just like, yes, it happens with Oxy, but it also happens with a bunch of other shit. This is not just like, it is the case of one very bad actor, but it is not an exception.
No, it's systemic now.
Yeah.
So are we getting into like that the Sackler protests don't go far enough?
Yeah, I think that's sort of where we're going. Yeah. And,
and I think we should just mention B2, the screen cap that you sent, like the mm-hmm. how Cigna had cut OxyContin from its list of covered drugs and replaced it with a drug from Purdue's competitor, Collegium. What the hell is that name? Richard read that Collegium had agreed to encourage doctors to prescribe lower doses of opiates. Richard's first thought was revenge. He immediately suggested that Purdue drop Cigna as the insurance provider for the company's health plan.
I mean, how good is that? Their own health insurance company refused to cover a drug that they manufactured.
And put your foot down.
The insurance company literally set up a exclusive deal with the exact opposite profit incentive with a different company.
Yeah. Like, it's like even they know that like, oh, this is fucked. Yeah. You know?
I think that everyone should just pick the Sackler family apart, and like they should really just be donating their money to all kinds of stuff, right? Like, I don't think that people should stop taking their money.
No,
like,
we
take
should
all
take
of,
more
it.
Of it. Yeah, yeah, put
take
their names
it all away.
On more things. Like,
yeah,
you know,
not
like,
only
you used
art,
to put someone out in the street in the stockade in order for mm-hmm. everyone to throw fruit at them. Instead,
literally
hoist
them up by their ankles and shake them until all the money comes out.
And when you every accessible subway station that you fund with their money, you start calling it, you know, the Sackler Wyckoff G.
Why can't I don't understand? Like, why can't we just like take their money and get rid of their names? On everything.
Yeah. No.
Well, yeah. Let's actually background real quick for the audience on like the protests that okay just mentioned. So there is an organization in New York founded by Nan Golden, who we mentioned earlier in the episode. Yeah, PAIN. PAIN. I don't remember what the acronym stands for. Does anyone remember? It's like patients.
Piss action. In your ass. In your
patients against.
Like,
it's definitely a stretch.
It's they had a word and they made the phrase basically. So Nan Golden, whose career was famously launched by a series of photographs of her and her friends and their social group, like her most famous body of work is The Ballad of Sexual Dependency, which is like her and her social group and their struggles through the AIDS crisis, but a huge component of that like is very much romanticizing addiction.
And she kind of like is associated with people like Dash Snow, who also died of an overdose and what did those sort of like, whoa, we're also wild in downtown.
Right. And she also, I think it was a couple years ago, was in rehab herself for opiates, and that she was prescribed like for like a post-surgical, you know, this sort of standard story you hear all the time, post-surgical procedure or like pain, that it leads into higher and higher doses, then you're getting prescribed fentanyl, then you're sourcing it on the street, and then she OD'd, went to rehab, and founded this organization, which has been staging protests in and around New York art institutions. The first one was, I believe, in October at the Met, and they threw like hundreds of like pill bottles that had like labels on them saying like Sackler kills, like into the fountain at the Temple of Dendor at the Met.
Which is like, how much money did it cost to make all of these plastic things?
Yeah, true.
I mean, God. I think that, well, I guess what we're getting at is
and she just did another one at the Guggenheim, like last week. Just to round us out. So they staged a die-in at the Guggenheim. They dropped banners and they threw like hundreds of leaflets through like down the center of the spiral that were like faux prescriptions, quoting actually our favorite quote, which was the blizzard of prescriptions, so deep and dense and white.
So, I mean, it looked gorgeous, and especially in the Guggenheim.
Her protests are very aesthetic.
The rotunda,
I mean, but I think what maybe we're all getting at is just like, is this how we're gonna
protest? Is it mass movement building?
It's different though, because the Sacklers have such a tie to these art institutions. So I would argue that the symbolic weight of it does carry, especially when you consider the media coverage that it's getting.
I mean, yeah.
But
in the places where the opioid crisis is at its most severe, they're not going to like see this news coverage or even care like what is Nan Goldin throwing something into a water fountain going to do.
It's a little different though, because like at the point that you're like lost in addiction and you're on the street, you're not your own best advocate.
I don't mean on the street. I mean like, I just mean in these like small towns rural.
My issue more is their list of demands is incredibly short-sighted, and it's like a very narrow type of protest. Like, I'm all for like die-ins. I think they're really effective in certain contexts, but like this is a very sort of publicity grabbing specific and narrow protest, and their demands that they've listed are basically like things that would be part of Medicare for All, first of all, like addiction services, long-term care, covering the cost of care, covering rehab. They want the Sacklers to pay for, methadone for people, and for housing and transportation for people affected by it. And they've sort of done this, like their whole messaging is about like those demands, but under capitalism and under a system that ignores like the systemic problem of the entire industry
that causes addiction too as well.
Right, and it also like it places blame on just like one bad actor, and as we've like said a couple times already, like that's not
the
one at
the Guggenheim was with Decolonize This Place,
right?
I know we had like a similar, because I went to the Decolonize This Place Whitney town hall at Cooper, which was about Warren Cantor, who's like a board member on the Whitney, who's, complicit in tear gas manufacturing.
Cool.
And it's like the whole thing was sort of like how to target this one guy. And it's just like, why? I brought up in a group, like, well, why are we being so short-sighted? Why?
Right.
Why not either abolish boards or demand workers on the board?
Yeah.
Workers on the board.
Like, it was like, it's just like so bizarre to me that we're just like focusing on one individual. And it's exactly like in the 60s when groups were doing the exact, like art groups, which by the way, were just like subsumed into capitalism and into the institutions eventually anyway. We're just doing the exact same thing that they did in the 60s with the Vietnam War and the MoMA, and like protesting the MoMA board and protesting the Met board. This all happened before.
Right. Yeah. It's a funnel to a very long career of being an activist artist who's like brought back for every like survey that talks about like propaganda every 10 years.
Well, it's like individualistic. Who paid for this website to be made? Who paid like for the pill bottles in and of itself? Like, and how are ways that they could have used this better? Because no offense, like I'm not from New York. I'm not from like Los Angeles. I'm not from a big city. None of this would have an effect on like the place where I'm from and like the opioid crisis and the heroin crisis there. Mm-hmm. It's like, sure, this gets pressed, but like,
I guess like everyone is like looking to meet each other in a different place. Mm-hmm. So, like taking issue with naturally performative people doing a performance is fine, because I think it's stupid too. You know, it's like, well, goddamn, look at all these art queers, and they're all just like getting in this circle, and they're all like laying around on the floor and taking pictures of each other. But that's like what those people do.
True. That's how they,
like,
yeah, that's how
they. But I guess what I want to say, like, is, and then there's other that and call their like call what they're doing, like, if they really want to like not be like faux like optic based lip service.
But it's, I think it's like important to see the value of what they're doing, because they're not going to be able to cover all the bases. You know what I mean? So like just the fact that we have
right,
a conversation.
They don't mention, like they're not talking about, they talk about the profit motive of the Sacklers, but they're not talking about like the actual points at which this could have been like intercepted, changed, or like fixed. Mm-hmm. You know, they're saying, oh, we're like ACT UP. We're like ACT UP, and we're dealing with this like in a multifocal, like on the ground at the point of like public interaction, like way. But they are only targeting those
like
locations and institutions that like basically like serve them best. They're not going at the FDA. Right. They're not going and like protesting insurance companies. They're like they're only talking about it in like the most narrow possible lens. And I think because they are naturally performative people who are very like adept at getting media attention, like they're drowning the narrative that is like a little more important right now of like these documents that we have access to, this trial that's going on, and the public discourse about how profit like was the real engine behind this crisis and and the motive, and by transferring that blame onto an institution for accepting their money, it like almost undermines the entire conversation.
Well, I think it just puts another, I think it puts another wedge into their construct that has been allowing these profits to continue, because a lot of what the critique of institutions accepting this blood money,
it's all blood money though.
It's all, our money is bloody, and there's actually drugs on most of it too. we know this. We all know this, and we're all experiencing a similar kind of like mind-blowing powerlessness to actually affect immediate change while people are dying every day. So just looking at this one thing and being like, well, damn, you know, like, okay, so what is working here? What's working here is that they are able to get a lot of press. But then like, what if we have a moment where we could say, hey, you're forgetting to include X, Y, and Z, or like, we think the next time you do a die-in, it should be at this place. And like,
coalition building is key for a lot of these things. And that's what really helped
with
the Amazon win.
This isn't helping with any, like, this isn't helping tank produce like stock prices. This isn't helping like the fact that like these companies, like pharmaceutical companies, they're like, I watch all of their stocks very closely. Mm-hmm. And I talk to my brother about it constantly. And they are not, their stocks, their value as companies is not affected one minute like degree by any of this. What actually affects like the like ability of these companies to like have the credit, you know, because like they don't have a lot of liquid capital, right? So they need like their stock value as a company to be high in order to leverage that to borrow money, right? Because like a protest like that does not do anything to undermine their ability to access capital and continue to do the things that they're doing.
And I would argue,
what does actually have a very tangible effect on a pharmaceutical company's value and ability to like have access to credit is discussions of nationalizing production of pharmaceuticals, or discussions of like the end of their patents.
So how do we get these, I guess, like to workshop the thing? I can see like, oh, this this whole action is garnering a lot of attention. How do we get them to understand this message and understand a way out of the issue that we're facing?
Well, honestly, I feel like we could, like, if Nan Goldman wasn't so up her own ass about comparing herself to ACT UP. Well, no, but if she wasn't so up her own ass about comparing herself to ACT UP and she was actually watching what ACT UP was actually doing right now, it would be a lot more effective if they went in and they were going in and saying, fuck the Sacklers, their blood money paid for this huge monument to their wealth and their generosity. We want the FDA to break their patent, seize their ability to produce this medication, and seize their company. That would tank their profits. Yeah. If you could, like, as you were saying, okay, like, it's important to, like, build solidarity. If you could get enough bodies demanding something like that, you could actually, like, have a very tangible effect on their value as a company and their ability to continue doing stuff like this.
And, you know, and that's tangible too for this. If these kids weren't so, if these people weren't so busy taking, like, selfies with pill bottles on the floor of a museum where only rich people can go in a city that's, like, impossible to live, that, like, it's just like we have a lot of these protests that are like echo chamber protests to the same people that already know about it. And it's a lot of time and energy wasted and a lot of money. And I think the demands that B is asking, if everyone kind of got behind, like, I want that sentence on a bag or something, or like as our, as
I mean, Gilead stock is tanking right now, not only because there's a challenge to their, like, ability to retain the patent for PrEP, but also because they have two other medications that are going to cycle out of their exclusive patent rights in the next 5 years. And they only have one that's in stage two approval.
Hit them where it hurts.
Right, exactly. So if you start if you start, like, basically breaking up Purdue, or, like, having calls for breaking up Purdue, you can, like, have a more, like, and someone, like, with that money and access to media could, like, engage an audience to do that, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think also that, I mean, we've kind of been making a bunch of comparisons to, like, ACT UP and Grand Fury, especially just because Nan Goldman, like, that's kind of her reference for all of this. And, like, I think it is worth kind of investigating, like, what the actual difference between, like, you know, the protests, and maybe also worth thinking about, like, the motivations for the protests around, like, ACT UP in the 80s. Like, I think I've probably said this before, but just, like, the community affected, right, by the HIV crisis, especially in the early days, was young, it was urban, it was happening in cities, it was happening to people who were part of Grand Fury and ACT UP. And, like, there was an urgency right there that I think might be lacking in certain ways from the protests of museums and things like that. Because, you know, as far as everybody tries to sort of see outside of their immediate surroundings, like, most of these protests do feel like art and art adjacent people are trying to affect change, like, really, really, you know, close to where they are, because that's sort of what they understand. Well, and I think that, like,
it's admirable to try to affect change just based on what you understand and what you have access to.
Yeah,
this is,
it's
like,
true.
A really specific thing that, like, museums are being targeted because the Sacklers are one of, like, the most famous donors to all of these museums.
No, absolutely.
And it's just, like, a chance to have that conversation.
Well, I don't know if, like, Nan Goldman's intention is to make change. I think her intention is very much that she wants their names removed from the walls. And how do you guys feel like that would be effective? I don't know.
We have awful, like, dead people's names, or awful people's names everywhere on everything. Trump is our president. Like, what?
I feel like it actually is letting them off easy if we take their names off everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, I think I said this on the last time we ended up talking about the Sacklers, but, like, I don't understand why people don't just go and, like, just, like, fucking put, like, a goddamn plaque or, like, vandalize every single, you know, like, Sackler family, like, name on every institution.
Well,
like,
because they won't put you in the permanent collection if you color on the walls without asking first.
I mean, dumbass Jerry Saltz was doing that. Honestly, he was on that kick for a bit.
Oh, that bums me out.
Fucking, like, paced over it. Like, I'm thinking a lot about, like, you know, removing racist people's names from things and mm-hmm. statues and stuff.
Yeah. Taking down the monuments.
I think it's all good. But yeah, I just think coalition building with a mass movement that has ideas for what, you know, like, I think. Yeah.
We're just trying to unite the left right now.
I mean, what if we just take everyone's name off of everything in museums? Like, and naming rights?
It should be, the museums should be public. The museums should belong to the people. They should be everybody should be like a library. Like, it shouldn't have any private donors. We shouldn't have boards. Like, that's what we should be demanding.
Well, and the other thing is that I think under that model, right, like, the Sacklers would be paying for that museum, but they would be paying for it in taxes.
Yeah,
right.
Baby.
And you don't get a fucking plaque for paying your goddamn taxes.
That's like, right. That's right.
Can we, like, also go to the fact that, like, on her website, her first call, she's like, she talks about her personal, like, doesn't talk about other people suffering, first of all. She's like, I learned about the Sackler family. They, like, formulated, marketed, distributed OxyContin. I decided to make a private public, the private public, but it's not private, like, a lot of people know this, public, by calling them to task. My first action is to publish personal photographs from my own history. This is like a marketing tactic, guys. Like, when everything comes back to your own name being, like, placed on something so you can make money off of whatever the fuck happened to you, I don't think it's to, like, help anyone. If this is her first action to publish personal photographs from her own history, she's selling those. Like, this is like a marketing thing.
Oh, people are individualized narcissists, like a lot of artists are. I mean, like,
we
it's
all
like
are pretty much
fucking. Like she, her brain, it, like, what, can she even exist another way? Like, I don't know. Can most artists?
Yeah.
Well, she also.
I mean, so our producer chimed in the chat that Nan Golden is inspo porn cripple now.
Fuck. Hell Nan Golden, you are canceled, sis, and that's the tea.
Yeah.
She's excommunicated from the ginger at Cabal.
It's sort of like, it's like agreed. I agree. Nothing is ever enough. And that's, like, one of the main critiques that we have of our movements. It's like, okay, so someone has a protest anywhere in New York City. Mm-hmm. How effective is anything that we do if we're in such an insular community? How effective is it to have a podcast when there's so many different competing voices? And how effective is it to do anything in an intellectual sphere instead of an active sphere? Like,
true.
What's the theory and what's the praxis? And, like, how many people are we helping? And that gets really important thing.
Wait,
to
have you been
consider.
Invading my dreams? It's like in the middle of the night when I wake up and can't go back to bed. It's like the same.
Like, I don't think so. Like, for instance, guys, like, we're not making, like, a ton of money off of our podcast.
No, of course not.
So, like, no, it's cool. But what I'm saying is, how much is one of Nan Golden's photograph from this era going for?
Well,
like,
I mean, that's probably why she's unwilling to discuss capitalism's, like, role in this, because she's, like, reliant on the art market, as we all are in some capacity at the end of the day.
But I'm, like, really not at all.
No, you're not. Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
not at all.
I,
yet.
Honestly, like, you know, I'm on Medicaid and SNAP, and I've been pretty much excommunicated from ever getting an art job ever. I've gotten to this point in my brain where I'm just like, let the narcissists do whatever the fuck they want. If it can change my material reality and help it, like, if they want to fucking go and be the face of things, go for it.
It just gives you a shorthand to talk about stuff.
I really, it's something for me to point someone else to and be like, look at this cool picture of this that happened. And
but I mean, she's divorced healthcare from the conversation entirely.
Yeah,
I think that's
it's
very
damaging.
Interesting. It is a little bit of a backslide in terms of messaging, because you have, like, so she's divorced, like, both capital and healthcare and, like, the private health insurance model from the whole thing, and it's backsliding from, like, every other, like, current activist agenda working around the same sort of issues, like, and so I yes, it's like any and all voices are, like, good.
Yeah, well, let's
in
use
this direction.
Her. That's
right.
I'm not saying that
right.
She, like,
Nan Golden, you're not canceled, but our emails are deathpanel.pod@gmail.com, and you guys are what? Art
artandlabor@gmail.com.
Yeah, so Nan, hit us up.
Yeah.
We're happy to write all of your messaging for you, and you can put your face
on it. Mm-hmm. Just let us, like, fucking
Let us use you like a puppet.
We'll stick our hand up your ass and make your mouth
pass. And you can come on the
podcast. In a nice way.
You can come on the podcast anytime. Just invade the feed.
We'll heavily edit you.
Yeah.
This is an official invitation.
Well, I think there's like an interesting example to Emily's point about like both how urban centers like this are, you know, sort of these like hotbeds for like activism and like community building and organizing, but like that problems outside of them don't necessarily get solved, and that like there's a tendency in big cities towards performative, like, you know, performative activism because like people in big cities are performative. I think an example that kind of maybe both reinforces and bucks that is the protests at the Brooklyn Federal Jail.
Yes.
Heat, that those protests.
Do you want to background the audience on that?
I probably should. I slid all the way into that topic.
Do you want to give us a little quick rundown of the MDC protests? When I first met Vince and Artie, we used to walk by there every single day.
Yeah.
Because y'all were in Industry City.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time we drove past and Artie was like, you know, that's a jail there.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
But there's like a huge police precinct and like a parking lot for all of the cop cars in front of it. I had never been
down that side of Industry City before. Oh, yeah. Like, to be honest.
Lucia lives there.
Yeah, I live around there.
It's nuts.
It's
fucked up.
But basically, I mean, essentially, people started getting reports through public defenders a few weeks ago.
And friends and family
and kind of on Twitter that...
There's no heat.
That there was no heat, there wasn't power, and that there had been an electrical fire that had basically knocked out all of that stuff, and that was two weeks ago. In the middle of winter when it was like 4 degrees outside.
Yeah,
and
it was the coldest it was all year.
Exactly. And so the air conditioners were just blowing cold air, you know, into cells, and people were like freezing and
I'm sure it was already bad before it got cold.
Absolutely.
And they were all collectively banging on the windows and on the walls. And
in any case, it pretty quickly became clear that, like, this was just completely inhumane. And, like, a huge protest was staged outside the prison for the jail for basically, like, I don't know, something like 5 days, essentially day and night. And the proximity of activists, you know, physically to that place... was I think a large part of what made that possible. And like that both is inspiring to me, you know, as somebody who like wants that kind of activism to be more prevalent, and also a little bit depressing in a way, because like it really does matter. Like the like physical location really does matter in terms of like the ability of activists to affect change. And
well, that's like one of those things where if you have that really specific place in mind, like, oh, there's something happening at the jail, we can go to the jail. But in this case, we have it, like, opioid usage is so sinister that it cuts across economic and racial lines.
And I'm thinking about every other jail also, which
absolutely. I mean, that was kind of where I was going to go.
We could cut down that protest and be like, well, that only helped one jail, but it's like, well, that's cool that it helped someone.
And
we're just trying to piece by piece.
But I don't think like the Sacco protest helps anyone, and they could have just staged it somewhere else or like in front of like insurance, like they could have put it in like anywhere else. Purdue's headquarters,
there's still time, they still can. And if they allow us to do their messaging for them,
exactly.
Okay, so like exactly like Purdue's headquarters, like why I think that
there was also that sculpture that was installed outside their headquarters. I don't remember who the artist was, but someone installed this like huge sculpture of a spoon that was like bent and ready to be freebased with like brown liquid, like white. Basically, they put it right outside, and it was like as soon as it was public property, it was like chained right there. So literally, right in front of the front door, there was this huge spoon, like
and the whole town,
everyone, like the city or whatever it was in, like of course the messaging cries for
for decency and think of the children.
You know what movie captures this sort of conversation really, really well, actually, is Sorry to Bother You.
True.
Sorry to Bother You really captures the, like, what can art actually do to affect this stuff? Right. And, like, there's different types of art throughout the movie that, like, does it help the workers' campaign, or is it just a weird, like it's
the answer
gets assumed by the media, like, what's the
everyone has to come together on the picket line.
Yes.
Everybody has to come together on the picket line,
and whatever that where that can it, whether if it, that's from home, you can still come together at the picket line from home, like there plenty of ways to do it from home.
So Emily, I think we've resolved that you need to be Nan Golden's PR person.
I look like her daughter. It's really funny, actually.
Oh, that makes sense. So actually we've got to wrap because Lucia's got to run and Emily's got to run, and I hate when podcasts are like, whoa, looks like we're getting out of time, guys. That's enough for this week. We actually literally are running out of time now. I guess my last thought is whoever keeps DMing me from new accounts saying that we're finding excuses to be rude, like, oh, come on the pod. We'd love to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
So, this has been the Death Panel. Thank you guys for coming on. If you do not subscribe to Art and Labor, we highly, highly recommend it. We could not recommend their podcast more.
Y'all, and vice versa. Let's do it. Crossover.
Yeah, crossover. Shows. This is like, sister pods.
Exactly.
That's so
wonderful.
This has been Death and Labor. I'm Beatrice Adler Bolton.
I'm Emily Barker.
I'm Vince Patty.
I'm OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love.
And
and we're out.
Stay Death alive for labor. Another week, people.
2015, let me begin. Incense Therapeutics, that is our name. We're raising the bar and we're changing the game. To be great, it takes a decision. To be better than the competition. VIP service like they never seen. Going deeper than Dan in a submarine. Build relationships that are healthy. Got more docs than Janelle's got selfies. Always compliant, like we supposed to be. Ain't trying to get that call from Yuchi. What we built here can't be debated. Shout out to Kapoor for what you've created. While the competition just making noise, we're making history cause we're great by choice. I love titrations, yeah, it's not a problem. I got new patients and I got a lot of them. I love titrations, yeah, it's not a problem. I got new patients and I got a lot of them. I love titrations, yeah, it's not a problem. And I got new patients and I got a lot of them. If you wanna be great, listen to my voice. You can be great, but it's your choice.
I know you love it when RZ is on. Greatness is the topic that we're gonna have a meeting on. Thinking about the competition, man, I'm just feeding on. Got a feeling that's the same reps I'm unleashing on. Oh, word, I heard about me, who you sleeping on? You should print the rep report and go and have a read-along. You don't think my team is strong, then you must be reading wrong. And just, okay, I got it. And just drive sales, get you succeeding on. And if it's a Friday, get your iPad, better keep it on. Off the label talking, man, we not up for discussion. We'll arrange to get a speaker you can meet with over supper. We can come into your office, we can go and bring some lunch. And while your staff is getting fair, we can start discussing substance. Yes, Lord, I don't know if it's an option, but before your first script, we need to print you out an opt-in out, please.
I love titrations, yeah, that's not a problem. And I got new patients and I got a lot of them. I love titrations, yeah.